Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 11 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Niall McGowan of the Bat Minute. Welcome to the show, Niall.
Podcasters, there'll be a law.
Definitely there should be. So thank you for joining me. Thank you for taking time out of your bat time. You know, same bat channel, same bat time.
To find
some time to talk about something else that doesn't include bats.
Well, you know, there's always relations to Batman and nearly everything, though.
So. That is very true. That is very true. You don't have to spoil it yet, but did you find things in this week's minutes that are connected to Batman?
Nothing too glaring this time. Usually there's particularly when you have, goons involved and stuff, nearly all the time they will relate back to Batman in some way, shape, or form. Most of it will just be William Sadler did the voice of so-and-so in, a Batman cartoon one time. It's nothing too, major connections this time, but usually, oh yeah, we have a recurring catchphrase on the show of everything's connected for a reason, because everything is connected to Batman. Actually, we'll get to it when we get to it.
I was going to say, you're saying that Batman is like the top of the genealogy chart and everything comes out of that? Is that what you're telling me?
I think it's because, at this point, it's almost unavoidable because they just keep making Batman movies. So eventually there will be a connection to literally every film ever made somehow linking to Batman. It's keep them going.
Do you count Joker as a Batman movie?
I would. If I wanted to be making connections, I would allow it for tenuousness. But to be fair, no. Every time Joker is brought up, I don't. I don't mind the movie. It was well made and stuff for what it is. But I do have a real thing of that's not the Joker though. That's just a completely different character. What the hell is this? That's not the Joker. But if I wanted to win in a quiz or something, then yeah, I would totally count it. But usually I would be no, completely. But it's Elseworlds, I guess. So
right. Okay,
you get away with
fair.
It in that regard.
Fair. No, but Elseworlds, all of the Batman don't take place in the same universe. That's the whole
true.
Thing.
Yeah,
every one of them is Elseworld.
Mm. Yeah. There's a thing the other day where I heard someone talking about it, because Joker 2 is coming up.
Yes.
And they're saying Arthur Fleck, it's a hero of the people, this Joker. And I was just like, the Joker is a hero of the people. What world are we living in? But I'll just let it go.
When you think of anarchy, so then he's a person of the people. Why not?
Yeah, but that's just so weird. Again, since 2008, the Joker has now slowly morphed into this Robin Hood figure. It's like he was literally supposed to be the embodiment of chaotic evil. What the hell is going on now? But the times they are changing, I guess.
That's true. You see, Heath Ledger left us, and that's it. We no longer have anything to hold on to when it comes to the Joker.
Yeah.
Oh well. What can you do? But we're not here to talk about the Joker. Well, we might be, but in general, we're here to talk about Die Hard 2. So minute 11 begins with a gun peeking out of a hidden holster and ends with Stewart saying a joke.
Mm.
So I gotta fall on my sword when I can. So on Friday, when I ended things, I was reading in the script, and the script mentions that McClane sees a holster. And I was like, I didn't even remember that he saw a holster. So I was like, no, that's something that they said in the script and didn't happen in the movie. And this minute begins with a fraction of a second shot of the holster. So
yeah,
there we go. I was wrong.
It's up until making notes for this, I would never have noticed that either. It's
exactly.
So quickly done. I spent an entire lifetime just assuming McClane was just I got vibes. I got bad vibes. That's why I started looking.
That's what I thought too. I thought I actually always thought he saw them move the package with their foot, and that was what threw him off. I didn't realize that he sees Cochran lean down and he sees the holster, and okay, that actually makes sense.
This minute very much hinges on two things that just could not pass these days. With one, someone just in an airport with a gun and a holster just hanging around is no big deal, And two, John McClane smoking within the terminal. That is another real, like, holy moly, this is 1990, all
right?
Because
that's geez. Right. And cops drinking cappuccinos.
Are they verified as cappuccinos? I always assume like they just knocked
off. They asked for cappuccinos on Friday's minute. Whether they get cappuccinos or not is a different thing. That I couldn't tell you.
They might Irish it up in their own time, I guess. Really,
I don't know if Vito would do that. You know,
I guess he's even like, well, we call it Italian it up, and it's just
that's right. No, but he, I mean, as we know, he's a by the book guy, and
oh my god, cannot believe we're talking about like, oh, are there any connections to Batman? The biggest connection to Batman is, of course, Robert Costanzo, who is the voice of Harvey Bullock in the Batman animated series. It's like his one big thing to me. It's like, oh, that's like before anything else. As soon as I see Robert Costanzo, I'm like, oh, Harvey Bullock. Yeah, of course.
You see, when I see him, I think of this movie. I think of City Slickers. Mm. City Slickers, he plays the guy who explains, you know, they're at the parents' day, you know, right at the beginning. And he's the guy, the construction worker. You know, we see like the crack in the butt, you know, as he's talking to the kids and he's swearing to the kids as he's telling the story, you know, of how they once saved a woman, you know, who was walking across and something fell on her legs. You know, and I also remember him from Total Recall.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, Total Recall. Yeah. But he's the guy who kind of
he's supposed to keep an eye on. On Quaid, and doesn't do a good enough job apparently.
He's a guy who sets up the whole the eternal Total Recall debate of people going like, did he get lobotomized? It's because the reason you have that in your head.
That's right.
It's because Robert Costanzo was like, a buddy of mine got lobotomized over there. What the hell, you know? Yeah, but
stay away from Recall.
Yeah. I just always remember feeling a little bit, well, not bad for him. It's not as if the guy's, you know, not doing well, but because obviously he played Joey's dad.
That's right. He played Joey Tribbiani's father.
And I remember seeing him interviewed one time where he's talking about, obviously, because Joey got his own spinoff show.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember freaking Adriana from Sopranos played his sister and
that's
stuff.
That's right.
And, but Robert Costanzo was saying, like, apparently he was given a contract and said, like, you will get to play like a series regular, like in the next season. You'll just be bumped up to, like, you're going to get paid every week, man. You're going to be like a proper character on this show every week. And he's like, oh, great. I've got like good, you know, long time work coming up. And then the show was canceled. And he was just like, yeah, I was supposed to be like I was going to be a sitcom star. And then, hey, what are you going to do? You know, like just got snatched away from him. And the thing, like, you know, you think, oh, it's a spinoff from Friends, the most successful show in the world. This can't fail. I'm going to be working steady for like the next 7 years at least. And then somehow it got canceled.
It's like, well, it's because they made a show about Joey and not about some of the others.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, they're lining up to do a freaking spin up of The Office with Dwight. It's like, don't make the joke character the main character. The joke character is supposed to be a side character because he's so weird. You can't have a whole thing focused around them. They become the straight man and it's become the whole thing messes itself up.
Yeah. It's true. I you're completely right about that. So what can I tell you? So basically, you know, John sees Cochran's holster, right? So I decided to actually look up about holsters. Do you know the different types of holsters that you can have for a handgun? Any
well, the thing is, you're talking to someone here who like lives in a country that doesn't have guns, basically, like, or didn't have guns. Like, I'm from Ireland. Obviously, there were guns in Ireland for a long time because of the troubles and stuff. But
don't tell anyone.
Yeah, but it's one of those things of just like, you know, I have American friends who know a lot about guns. I'm like, I've never seen a gun. I've seen them in real life because the freaking British Army used to walk around with them all the time. But I've never held a gun.
You've never held a gun? Really? You've never even gone? Never. In England, you can't go to like to a shooting range or anything like that, rent a gun and go shooting?
No, nothing. Oh, actually, no. To be fair, just this year, I went to a shooting range for the first time. And before that, no, never had held a gun. Never been near a gun beyond when I was a kid and it used to have the British soldiers was wandering around. And then after like 1997, you didn't get that so much either. So,
right.
No, I couldn't tell you a single thing. Like the amount of things on Batman, we always look up guns and we're just like, apparently this is a whatever. And we're going from a complete novice perspective because no, we're never near those things over here.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay. You see, I live in a country where everyone has guts. So in Israel, that's not an issue.
But no, particularly holsters too. I was like, you can get different kinds of holsters. It's like I just put it in my pocket.
Well, I
No,
don't know if you'd want to put a gun in your pocket. That's you don't want a gun going off by accident in your pocket. So I actually looked it up, and they have about 12 different types of holsters that you can get. You have the outside the waistband holster, or a belt holster, which is mostly what you see in Westerns, where you see the holster is on the outside. Okay. Then you have the inside the waistband holster, which is what you see in movies when people are like off duty. So you have it, either they put it in the small of their back, or you have it on their waist. All right. Then you
That's the one
have.
like under the jacket, the kind of like the reaching in under kind of under your armpit. Is that kind
Right.
of
No,
one?
that's not that
Yeah.
one. No, I'm
Oh.
that one I'm talking about, like, for instance, have you seen Point Break?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Right. So when the cop is lying on the ground in the bank, and he like pulls out his gun, it's like he lifts up his shirt from behind. It's in the small of his back, in the
Oh,
waistband
yeah.
there. Okay. What else you have? Then you have shoulder holsters, which is one of the possibilities of what we see here. Okay, it's two straps that are connected like a backpack, basically. And then the holster is mounted on the strap on one of the sides, and then it's easy for you to reach your hand into your jacket and then pull it out from basically under your armpit type of thing.
Yeah.
Um,
You have to
then
call it a shoulder holster because armpit holster doesn't sound as cool.
fry, yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I
I
would
guess
agree with that.
they're better too for like, I guess if you're kind of like a not undercover, but probably also when you're undercover, but just yeah, if you don't want to be walking around intimidating people by having a gun at your hip the whole time,
Yeah, but
it,
that didn't help Cochran, because you can actually see
yeah.
it. But that's part of the plot, I guess. And
Yeah,
then,
that's because of McLean's vibes. He's just vibing. And he's just like, oh my God, I can sense the shoulder holster over there.
that's right. And then you have sling holsters, which are similar to that, but it also has one that goes across the chest, a strap that goes across the chest, just in order to keep it, I guess, firmer, so it doesn't swing out when you're walking around Dulles Airport,
Yeah.
reaching for a package.
Be like, him having a flashback now. I was like, if only I'd taken that other holster,
That's
this
right.
whole thing could have been having a flashback to like the holster, like, ah, it's $2 extra. $2! Get the hell out of here.
Well, part of the thing is that it seems as if the holster, what's the whole point of the packages? I thought the whole idea was that the packages are supposed to be the guns. But
Well, maybe the packages are obviously presents for Esperanza, just to celebrate him getting out. There's like, hey, here you go. There's a cake in there, some
because
flowers.
in the script we talked about last week, when one of the guys, I think it's Baker, shoots the custodian. So in the script, he shoots him through the package, showing that the gun is in the package. But in the movie, you don't see him shoot through the package. He is carrying the package, which is also very strange, showing up in a church, that you're going to do some electrical
I
work,
guess.
and you have this Christmas package. They're like, oh, hey, we wanted to bring the custodian a package for Christmas.
I guess I just want to have like backup artillery. So some of the in the packages will be like the heavy machine, like machine guns and stuff. And I was like, well, what if I need something that's,
Right.
I have to quickly kill, someone on the fly. I'll have a gun right instead of having to fit her with a package. I'll just have, a little thing under my. Although again, in modern era, like airports, this is just like you're at, like, dude, you couldn't even get in there with your shoes on, for
That's
Christ's
right.
sake, Ironically, now you could do Die Hard 2 now where John McClane doesn't have his shoes in this movie, theoretically,
That's true.
really.
That's true.
But
That's very true. Then you have thigh holsters, which is you usually see in spy movies, maybe in like James Bond, where a woman has a gun on the inside of her thigh. Then you have ankle or boot holsters.
Yeah, the classic the other one too holster where it's
Exactly.
always like, hand over your weapons, the other one too.
That's right. And then the last one that I found is a cross straw belt holster. Okay, which is basically where you keep the gun on the opposite side of where if you're a righty, you have it on your left thigh. And if you're a lefty, you have it on your right thigh, so you can draw from the side, as opposed to just, pulling it from the same side.
Well, that seems like that would be less convenient to me, but what do I know?
I would have to disagree with you on that. It is a little more convenient to reach across and then pull it out, because think about it. If you're taking your arm, it's what's easier for you to do with your arm, to pull your arm up and back to then pull a gun out of your right hand side, or to just move your arm to the left hand side and then just pull it out.
Fair enough.
But again, I guess it all depends on the situation and what you really need it for.
See, my entire knowledge of like guns is like, oh, Clint Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Like, oh, look, he was pretty quick with it down by his side, so
that's right.
I guess that's the best way.
There you go. And there, sometimes you'll see in movies, or westerns, you'll see that they have on both sides backwards, and then they cross their arms to pull out the guns. I think maybe in Reservoir Dogs they did it also at some point. I don't know. I don't remember.
I think they're doing Dirty Harry. I think because he had that freaking 44 Magnum was giant, but I think that was a shoulder holster thing. It's like, how do you fit that thing under your jacket? It's huge. Like it's the cliche, but it's like, damn it, Callahan, that cannon is against regulations,
But it's Clint Eastwood, so what do you expect?
Oh, you can fire the thing without any recoil, which is, again, not an expert in gun, but looking at Dirty Harry, he's like, I'm pretty sure you'd be like blown back by that thing.
Probably. I would agree with that. I would agree with that statement. So then the shot changes, and we see both Garber walk away, and then Cochran follows along with him, and John is just eyeing them. And we mentioned this last week. You can still see the beers on the table, which you'd think that Stewart would probably be very happy, very unhappy if he knew that they were drinking beers before they're about to go do something.
I've got notes for later this week. Like I have to say, Hans Gruber would be spinning in his grave if he saw some of these guys on the job. it's the organizational, standard between movies is really significantly dropped, which is even weirder considering they're military guys.
But, right.
We'll get to that.
All right, we'll get to it. I'm looking forward to hearing that. And then John then takes a long puff of his newly lit cigarette, because you can see that it really isn't. He actually just lit it, a minute or two ago, and then stuffs it out. So he just needs that one puff. That's all he needed. And then he grabs his jacket and gets up and starts looking at them, and then he sees them walk away, and then he walks towards the bar, and we hear someone just say out loud, I don't know who this is, and they say, Scott, straight up, please. And then he walks over to the two policemen who are standing there and goes, excuse me, officers, this may sound like a wild goose chase, but I think I saw. And first of all, I wanted to mention the fact that the wild goose chase, this is the second time in Die Hard that they mentioned that they used the phrase wild goose chase, because they did use that in the original Die Hard also.
Well, how could the same phrase be said by the same guy twice?
That's right. And in that one, we had Eddie, when he's pretending to be the desk guard when he was talking to Al. So he said, the computer's probably sent you on a wild goose chase. Mm-hmm. So, but I saw the phrase wild goose chase when I was doing research for this, and I was like, I know I've done that before, and I had to start going through my different movies to figure out which one it was in, and it was just very funny that it actually was in Die Hard.
Makes sense.
I'm gonna have to now look in when I do Die Hard 3 and Die Hard 4 if they have the phrase wild goose chase around there or not. I don't know. And as he's saying this, the cop who's there turns around, and we see that it's Robert Costanza.
Costanza.
That's right. And this was prior to Seinfeld becoming so popular. So
Costanza or Costanzo.
Right. Exactly. It's not the same. It's not exactly the same. But there is a resemblance.
I want to do a can't stand you joke, but it's like, no, it doesn't work. Can't stand yo.
Doesn't work. And then he says, "Say what? Saw what?" And we see the gears moving in John's mind, and John's like, "Oh, great, this guy again."
I think it's the way that he says the saw what, because he already has a bad attitude. As soon as he clocks this McLean, it's as if he's like, no matter what he says, I'm not going to give this guy the time of day. Like,
that's right.
He just has like, oh, so what? Like, as if he's like, oh, you're only here to give me crap.
And, so and John why figures would I believe it out, you? Too. So that's great.
Yeah. Although it's such an odd thing. Like, considering these two men are cops, and neither of them can just go like, okay, let's be serious for a second. And I can actually discuss this with you. But both of them are just like, you know what? We're not going to resolve this problem because we both don't like each other for a mild altercation we had just outside just 2 minutes ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, what there's the sliding doors version of this movie of McClane had just gone like, I'm telling you, I saw this guy from blah, 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 and then pleading with the other cop to be like, look, seriously, I'm a cop from friggin' New York, and I'm currently in L. And then, but you know, they could have got this solved a lot faster. But,
yeah. Well, no, they would have they would have taken Cochran. That would have been it. They wouldn't have solved everything.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Although I can imagine it probably would have ended up in like Cochran would have shot, he would have shot this one cop. Then you could have had a great buddy cop movie with Vito and McLean.
Like, there you go.
It's so,
that would be a great name for the movie, Vito and McLean.
Yeah, yeah. Just make a movie, just call that now anyway. Just like, is there anything to do
with that? No, but it won't be the same. It wouldn't be the same without Bruce Willis and Robert Costanza.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So,
that's
I don't know. I don't know about that. Mm-hmm.
I am very wary now of, like, I am certain there's execs sitting in Hollywood now looking at Bruce Willis going, like, how long have we got until we can reboot Die Hard? Because they're
well,
basically
let's hope not.
Going,
like, let's
we,
hope
can't,
not.
We can't do it. Oh, I hope it never happens. But I am certain that there's people sitting there going now, it's like, TikTok, you know, there's going to be a time where we're like, now we got nothing to hold us back now. So, and then it'll go ahead and it'll be... no one will want it, and it'll just be one of those things. Like they announced yesterday, they're rebooting the X-Files. And it's just like, who wants that?
Nobody. Well, that's what they're doing here nowadays. Everyone just wants to reboot. And no one has original ideas. They said, oh, let's take the old ideas and bring them back. Which in some ways, it sounds great. But then when it actually happens, you're like, huh? Why are they doing this?
Yeah.
You know, and I think it has a lot to do also, for instance, when you're talking about TV shows, they've changed the way that they make TV shows nowadays. Cause back in the day, back in the '80s, nineties, or seventies, even when the TV shows, most episodes were standalones. You know, you might've had an overall picture of what's going on, but now the show has to have a running theme that is touched upon in every episode. And that's the main thing. Like, for instance, I'll give you a perfect example is Quantum Leap, okay, which they just rebooted this past year. I loved the original show. I love the fact that every episode is completely standalone, and there's very little connections between them besides the fact that you have the two main characters. That's it. You know, and you can change around the order. You can do so many things about with it. Now,
the handy thing is that you could literally. Oh, I missed it the last 3 weeks, but I'm watching it now. Oh, you haven't missed it.
Exactly. That's right. And then they would have reruns also the same way. You'd watch a rerun and you'd be like, okay, great. I didn't see this episode before. So, and I didn't miss anything by not seeing it in order. So have you watched the new show?
No, I remember hearing that they're rebooting Quantum Leap and then just didn't, the same thing happened with when they rebooted Magnum PI and MacGyver. I was just like, I heard it was happening. And then, I turned around. I was like, no, it's like two seasons in now.
You know, right. Well, neither of those. I didn't watch either of those, but because I like Quantum Leap so much, I decided that I would watch this one. And I mean, the leaps are less consequential in this new show because there's this overall conspiracy theory that they're dealing with, you know, in real time.
Yeah,
and that's like the main thing. And that's what TV shows do nowadays. And you know, it's very different from what I grew up on, at least.
I just remember seeing the because the one show that recently really tried to bring it back is Poker Face, the Natasha Lyonne, Ryan Johnson show. And that is like, to be fair, that does have an overarching story, but like most of the episodes are unrelated to it.
Right.
So it will be like, it's a mystery of the week thing where, you know, someone commits a murder and then Natasha Lyonne shows up and she's somehow connected and then she solves who it is by the end. And I remember seeing like younger people in comment sections going like, I'm enjoying the show. But isn't it a bit stupid that like every episode there's like a different crime and she's always there to solve it and it's just like she shows up in different places and then she has to solve another murder? Like, that's ridiculous. I was like, that used to be like 98% of TV was just like the next week something else happens somewhere else and that same character
is
there.
Think about Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, yeah.
How many people can die in that little town in Maine?
Well, that's the thing is over in England too. There's a show called Midsummer Murders set in a little English village. That's a little tiny village. It might only have like 100 people. That's been going on for 25 years, and it's all about murders in the same little village.
Yeah.
I was like, how is everybody not dead yet? Like, it's that many people dying all the time. And they're all getting murdered. It's not accidental deaths. There's a new murderer every damn week. But,
oh, wow. Right. So John's response is Elvis. Elvis Presley.
Yeah. And I love the fact that he has to clarify Elvis because he's my best. Not Costello. Elvis Presley. Right. Like, you should know that that's who I saw.
That's true. But what's great is that in the late 80s, early 90s, that's when there was huge, you know, all these fake sightings of that Elvis is still alive. You know, that.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
And that's
the, I don't know if you guys got it in America, because I think people in it were doing very thick put on American accents. So maybe it was a European ad. But there used to be an ad for Kit Kats all based around that. It was like iconic back in the 90s where it was a guy in a chair flicking around the TV and it's all these like rednecks and stuff going, yeah, it was him. I saw. And going like, yeah, he was abducted by rock and roll loving aliens. And then, you know, they cut the reporter going, no, we can't verify that, you know, we looked in the grave, the king is in fact dead. And it revealed then that the guy in the chair was Elvis going, oh, I ain't dead, baby. I'm just having a break. And he just snaps a Kit Kat and eats it. And yeah, I always associate anytime now people mention Elvis still being alive, I'm like the Kit Kat ad, right?
Exactly. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So then John at this point just turns away from them. He apparently has nothing to do. He doesn't want anything to do with them. He's not really interested in dealing with Vito. He's a little still. I guess he's still pissed at him a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And then John walks away, and as he's walking away, we get the line that you started today's minute with. First, yeah. Ought to be a law.
Yeah. I was very curious as to like what the other cop's thinking though, because then he's just like, what, this random guy?
Right. I'm assuming
Vito gave us crap about Elvis.
That's right. I'm assuming Vito explained it to him afterwards. You know, said, you know, that's the guy I just gave a ticket to, and you know, but the question is, do you think he really remembers that John's from L.A.?
I definitely, because I mean
we just saw it 11 minutes ago, but he, you know,
yeah, was... I think I might stick in his mind because it's such an exposition dump, that scene. It's just like, yes, I am a cop, I'm currently living in LA because of my wife's job, but I used to come from New York, but now we're here in the city of Washington at this airport. And I'm just like, whoa, we're only 2 minutes in, buddy, like calm it down.
That's right. And you know, at least they catch us up, but they also catch up Vito. Yeah. So, you know.
Mm. Well, I think he probably, in that moment, though, he probably had he might have seen the shield and was just like, yeah, whatever. But he probably was, as soon as he heard, I'm from L.A., that wormed its way into his head. He's like, oh, ass, I'm L.A., screw this guy. You know, that's, and I know, no matter what else John said to him, I don't think he got past. As soon as he heard the words L.A., he's just like, nope. That I will not give you the claim to see Elvis Presley down there all the time. They're nuts in L.A.
Right. Okay, that's fair. Yeah. And then the shot.
So what? Vito just thinks McLean came over just to make that joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he thinks. The whole thing seems a bit like what? I don't know. I always thought too, a policeman would be a lot more aggressive, but like, hey. You trying to waste police time? Like, what the hell are you coming? Are you giving us crap? What the hell are you doing, buddy? Like, we're just trying to do our jobs over here and stuff. But
we'll get to that in a few days when we talk more about the Vito's job. We'll get there. And at this point, the shot changes and we get a reporter who's sitting there interviewing all these people from the Justice Department, and she says, "There's a lot of people from the Justice Department here. Is there a reason for that?" And she puts the microphone to one of them and he goes, "Just routine." And she goes, "Just routine?" "Yes." "Any comments, sir?" To a different one. "Not now. Thank you, sir. Thanks." And
I was wondering, these two men are like identical as well. Like
one's a little older. It's like a father and son, but they're wearing the same clothes.
Yeah, this is because it's not so much like how could the same shit happen to the same guy twice. It's like, how can the same guy twice, like it's just the same dude.
But maybe that has to do with the fact that they're, you know, that these are the clothes that people from the Justice Department wear, I guess.
What they, I was wondering if they were, you know, there was any kind of way they would extrapolate this into like an Agent Johnson and Special Agent Johnson joke. Because, oh, so these guys are from another bureaucracy, but also they like they might have name tags that both say, like, Robertson or something on them, and they're also both like, yeah, they just wear the same clothes and just have the same haircut, and they basically look like they're the same exact man. But although I got a very big blast, though, speaking of FBI, like, the whole outfit, I guess maybe it's just because it's both, they both came out in 1990, but it's very Agent Cooper in Twin Peaks, this thing.
It's true.
That trench coat and that suit's like, oh, that's a very Agent Cooper look. And the hair, too, but you always had a kind of cooler, swept black kind of thing going on, but... yeah, but I was wondering in some ways, because they're so similar. I was like, this feels to me like there should be an Agent Johnson joke here. But it's, weirdly, that was not one of the beats they repeat from the first movie.
I guess, thankfully, you know, we do want this to feel as unique as possible, where it's not just repeating everything that they did in the previous one.
And I do appreciate, too, then, when they do bring that back in Die Hard 4, it is like a,
Exactly. You know,
like they mentioned again, like, oh, yeah, Agent Johnson from the FBI. Like, oh, my God, there it is.
Right. That's true. And Samantha looks like she's, like, exhausted, just asking these, you know, mundane questions and getting even more mundane answers for the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, but she's...
Of course, on Monday, that's right, right here, but, mundane questions for a Monday.
Right. And, I mean, she's at least polite about it. And then she looks around, and she's looking for some sort of salvation, and then she sees Stuart. You know, and she can see that she sees Garber walking with Stuart. Obviously, she doesn't know who Garber is. We do.
Yep.
You know, the two of them are whispering to one another. And first she goes, hey, that's Colonel Stuart over there. And then we hear a little bit of the conversation. And Garber says, got a little problem with personnel. Last minute replacement. And then we get how's the security here? Like we figured, a joke. I mean, I like the fact that, you know, if you've never seen this movie before, you don't catch this line. You don't know what they're doing here. You know that they're giving us a little bit of a preview of what we're going to find out in like an hour and a half from now. But
I think you're still two minutes later distracted by the naked Tai Chi with William Zadler.
So like, oh, that's a good point.
I was not expecting
that. That's right. After, well, that was 10 minutes. That was 10 minutes ago, and people are still thinking about that. You're right. There is something to that.
I also mean, like, you know, you obviously know going through it minute by minute, but like this movie is so front loaded, like just a massive exposition dump in the first minute. And then like minute three or whatever is just like naked William Sadler. Like what the hell? And then all the stuff about Franco Nero in the background.
That's right.
Like, I don't think the first, like, five times I watched the movie, I don't think I heard a word of that. Because I was just like, why? I'm just looking at William Sadler's ass now. Like, what about that?
True.
Then later on, I was like, oh, no, they're telling you everything you need to know about the bad guy. Like,
No, and also it was very timely at the time, because when this came out, this was all around, well, everything was going on in Panama and the Iran-Contra hearings and Noriega. And that's what they're talking about here, basically. So I saw this in the theater when it came out. Do you remember the first time you was when you saw this movie?
Oh, it would have been just randomly on television because I was born in 87.
Okay,
so I was nowhere near ready to watch.
You mean your parents didn't take a 3-year-old Niall to go see Die Hard 2? Unbelievable.
No,
I think you need to fire your parents.
I think I saw like the Die Hard movies out of order too. I think this might have been like up until obviously I saw 4 when that came out, obviously because I wasn't of age then.
Okay.
But I think I saw With a Vengeance first.
Okay.
And then I remember really wanting to see, it's such a bizarre period of time, because obviously back then, didn't have access to the internet, didn't, because I grew up in a small town in Ireland, the video stores weren't great. So a lot of time you just had to wait for things to come on TV. And I wanted to see the first Die Hard so much, and it seemed like it just wasn't on TV for like years over here. And I remember then when it eventually showed up, I was like, thank God, here it is. And then I finally got seeing Die Hard, and around that time it was like one of these things that they do constantly now. It's like, well, it's Christmas time, you get both.
That's right.
And so it would have been like, I guess I would have been probably like 10 or 11, and it was just randomly on TV, and I was, you know, just remember watching it and must have been like, that was great. So you know, and then finding out afterwards that people didn't like this one as much.
Correct. Yeah, I don't know why I like this one a lot. I don't understand. For me, the Die Hard films are, you have a trilogy of great Die Hard movies, and then you have one that's really good but not as good, and then you have a terrible. That's it's a trilogy with an appendix.
I can see this one. It's more clunky. I can see now, in my elder years, I can see like, oh, there's certain bits where I was like, you wouldn't, John McTiernan wouldn't let that pass. I feel like there's certain little bits I was like, that could have been executed better. But still, people saying like, oh, this is the bad one, up until obviously there was the really bad one, that came with five. But still, like midway, like once it gets kicks into the action and stuff, like midway through, you're just like, this is just really fun. Like, I kind of understand why you'd have any real beef with it. Like, it mightn't be as good as the first one or the third one, but it's still pretty good, you know. But although I'm maybe it's just the contention, me just being contentious for the sake of being contentious. But maybe it's because I saw it first. But people always rave about the first one, and I love the first movie. But I'm always having a little thing of like, I think. Three is the best. I think I really love that film. Like Die Hard with a Vengeance. I think that's like the pinnacle of Die Hard for me. But
I have a trouble ranking them
well,
because ranking the first three. For me, the first three are all amazing. So, it's hard for me to say which one I think is better.
yeah, I think it could be though, because I have a lot of like, I used to, but my friend I used to hang around with in university, me and him quoted With a Vengeance, With a Vengeance, ironically. Like just call, and now me and my friend through doing Movies by Minutes, Dave Fallis, will occasionally just like send each other voice notes of just going like, sit simple pie man, sit some salmon to the pie man, give me your pies, all right, kid, you're hidden. Just randomly send each other riddles and German accents and stuff. And from that, it's just like, well, I think With a Vengeance, it's clawed its way up to the top just by that. For
Okay, that
you
is
know,
definitely fair.
but
That definitely makes sense. Now, my
yeah.
biggest question here is, Garber is talking right now to Stewart, and he's informing him that they've had a change in personnel. So why is he only telling him that now? They were in that motel together. He could have mentioned something at that point. And also,
Maybe he was just like, if I tell him in the hotel, he might do something to me. So I'll wait until we're out in
because he
public
was doing
and then
Naked Tai
yeah,
Chi
get
at the
too high.
time. Who knows?
He's like, I don't want that guy swinging his leg towards me when he's buck naked. So I'll wait until we're out in the open. And he's like, no, you can't punch me now, buddy.
No, but also just 2 minutes ago, we saw Garber was in the phone booth, on the walkie-talkie. So I had always assumed, even last week when I was talking about this, I assumed he's talking to Stewart, that he's getting the go from Stewart that the teams are in place.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
apparently not, because then it would be really strange for him to then be meeting Stewart a minute later. Like, why didn't you just wait? I don't know.
No, that's he just couldn't stand
I
to be
guess
away from
not.
him. You know, he's just like, I just like hearing your voice,
There
boss.
you go. All right, that's all I have for this minute. You have anything else for this minute before I get into the script?
No, nothing that can't be passed over into, other
Okay.
minutes, because
Great.
yeah.
Okay. So the script has a few little changes in it. Not many, but there's a few. First of all, as I mentioned, on Friday, it mentions the holster, which is something that's actually in the movie and not something that they just made up. And then it says after John shows up at the police and says, this may be a total wild goose chase, but I think I just saw, it says he stops, camera adjusts. The cop he's talking to is the same a**hole who towed away his car. And then, Vito says, say, well, saw what? And then he goes, Elvis. He doesn't even have to say which Elvis in the script.
I mean, it might have been on set. They're like, well, there is another
Right.
very famous Elvis at
Maybe.
the moment. So,
That's right.
yeah. They might have been like, oh my God, Costello, he's here. Like, no, I should clarify, the dead Elvis, the one who's on
And
Earth.
then it says McLean turns, throws money near his glass, and quickly exits the bar, which I guess makes sense because I don't think we saw him pay when he got up. So.
That's the thing I've never done. I always, maybe I'm too neurotic. I've never done the movie. Yeah, just throw your money down and walk away.
Right. No, I
Like
haven't done
it's,
it either.
I'll always be like, well, yeah, it just seems like it would be like someone could just come and steal
That's
my
right.
money as well. You just expect, yeah,
Right.
it's a real movie thing to do. So one of my pet hate things of in movies too is people ordering something at a cafe and then them showing up, putting down the drink, and then they get up and leave. And it's just like, you're paying for the thing, sit and that's drink right. your coffee or whatever. But
that's very true. Or just like what McLean did here. I mean, I don't smoke, but you know, if I did smoke, I wouldn't, you know, take one puff and then put out my cigarette. That's money too. You paid for it.
You think too, like all the trauma from that first movie. Like, you know, he never had any. Like, he's always looking for new cigarettes, or he was having to swipe things from people, and like he didn't even have shoes back then. He should be like really savoring every puff. Like, no, I'll put it out.
Well, I guess that's because it's not European cigarettes, so he doesn't like them anymore.
Okay.
So then it says a shot with the media trying to get the half dozen uniformed U.S. marshals or the three Justice Department lawyers to talk to them without success. But one reporter, Sam, notices Stewart moving through the airport. And then she says, hey, she nudges her cameraman. She goes, hey, Colonel Stewart. The cameraman goes, old news. And she goes, better than these luxes. And then it says very quickly, Sam and the cameraman do their best to slip away from the pack. And then we have Stewart and Garber walking along towards the exit. And then Stewart says, everything on schedule. And he goes, tapping airport phones right now. Got a slight problem with personnel. Last minute replacement. What's the status of the security here? So, I mean, I like the fact that in the script, they actually say that they're tapping the phones, because that's more or less what we find out later that they're going to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess they decided to keep us in the dark about that, so we don't know exactly what it is.
I prefer it in the movie when you don't know. I think it's a good reveal later to be like, oh, like it actually makes them seem so much more organized that they did that without even the audience.
That's true. We'll find out later this week if we can figure out what it is that Miller and Cochran are doing. But we'll figure that out. So every Monday we have a segment called McLean Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis performances. So start with your number five and work your way up.
Pondering this for a little bit. So sort of torn between two, because I want to give a shout out to what I think like one of some of the greatest range I've seen.
So you can do an honorable mention if you want.
I'll do an honorable mention for genuinely for him in Friends, when he was in Friends as Rachel's boyfriend for a little bit, because he was just like him playing the tough, you know, intimidating, just like Bruce Willis does have a presence about him. So just everyone being kind of in fear of him just by him standing there and stuff really translated well across the TV for me.
But I find that really creepy that Ross was going out with his daughter at the same time, you know.
Oh, totally. Oh, no, again, 1,000,000% justified. Everything about Bruce Willis and that's like, I understand why, yes, a professor dating my daughter would be a massive cause for concern. Yeah. And I just enjoyed like him able to make, you know, Bruce, you got a little Bruce Willis dance and stuff there, him singing, making a tit of himself in front of the mirror and stuff. It's funny. So give that an honorable mention. So my number five would be actually his Twilight Zone episode. He did Shatter Day, which is just like incredible. Like I'm a sucker for wordplay. Have you seen the Twilight Zone episode he's in?
No, never seen it. Now I'm gonna have to go look.
Oh, it's all on YouTube. Thankfully, it's one of those ones. The only problem with it is that it was from the '85 series, so they'd always try to like chuck in, you know, like two stories within the episode. So like it goes from like it has this inciting incident, and then it instantly goes to like him massively panicking and stuff. You're like, whoa, calm down here. But it was directed by Wes Craven. Probably fresh off Nightmare on Elm Street, really, because 85. So, and yeah, got a Bruce Willis full head of hair, luscious locks and stuff on his head. It's actually a very like Lost Highway kind of setup where he accidentally rings his home phone number, and then another Bruce Willis picks up, and he sort of discovers like, well, you can't be me. I'm me. And the other guy's like, no, I'm you, but you're me. And then they have a whole thing where he discovers that basically it's like his shadow self has somehow emerged. Does the classic doppelganger thing of like he starts living Bruce Willis's life better than him and stuff. But it has a thing of Bruce Willis getting to play like a sleazy businessman and then who goes into complete emotional meltdown and starts panicking about everything. But the others, and a weird thing, like the other guy who's living his life better than him who's kind of the villain of the thing, is very creepy and very quiet. And it's actually like a good villainous turn from Bruce Willis.
Oh, wow.
But also, he's also like, he's a better person than the main Bruce Willis. Like, he's like, no, I'm going to move our mother in with us. And I've cut off all your dodgy business dealing because we should be more ethical than this. So it's weird that he's playing it very sinister, but he's actually like a good guy and stuff. And yeah, Bruce gets, it's very like, you know, it's Wes Craven and it's Twilight Zone. So it's very campy. Like deliberately so.
Oh, wow.
And like Bruce is clearly having just the time of his life, getting to just be like crazy, like, oh, my whole life's just falling apart and all this kind of stuff. So I'll put that as number five. I think genuinely he's really, really a lot of fun on that. Then I'll put number four, I would put him doing, I'm a 90s kid. So one of the default Bruce Willis roles in my mind is him doing the voice of the villain in Beavis and Butthead Do America. Where he was,
yeah, okay.
He was Muddy. The whole joke of the movie was that he accidentally hires Beavis and Butthead to do his wife, who was Demi Moore, voiced by Demi Moore in the movie, because obviously at the mm-hmm. height of them been a couple and stuff. And to be fair to Bruce, because usually when Bruce does voice acting, like, you know, Bruno the Kid or, you know, freaking Look Who's Talking or whatever, you can always tell it's Bruce Willis. But in that, he's like fully invested in playing like a kind of hick, gruff drunk. So for a long time, I didn't realize that when I was a kid, I didn't realize that that's John McClane from Die Hard. He's actually like fully invested in playing the character and stuff. And yeah, it's just a good, you know, recurring joke of this, like, you know, watch out for my wife. She'll do you as fast as she does as you do her. And Beavis and Butthead, like, whoa. There's a lot of fun to be had there. And there's a bit later on where like they he ends up trying to kill them himself. And they accidentally escape. And he just has this great delivery of the line where he discovers the trunk empty. Like the car trunk he put them in is empty. And he's like, God damn it, she did it to me again. And in my day-to-day life, like at times when things go wrong, that line will echo in my head, Bruce Willis's delivery of that. So I genuinely think, Bruce Willis is really, really good in Beavis and Butthead Do America. Like, and so much so.
All right, that's fair.
Number three, getting into a lot of the simple ones now, though. 12 Monkeys, I'll put up there. Because I think he's just... I admire that's him really, you know, taking a punt and going out and doing weird sci-fi with Terry Gilliam, you know, mm-hmm. at the height yeah. of his powers. You know, I had a blockbuster Bruce Willis in a vest 90s, you know, he went like, no, I'm going to do this weird, you know, dystopic nightmare, confusing as hell thing from the Monty Python guy. Like, that seems like that'd be fun for me. And yeah, he gets to play like a, you know, he gets to let loose, but it's just, yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I can imagine at the time people saying Bruce Willis is in this, you probably immediately thought it was going to be something really dopey. And I was like, no, it's you know, Bruce Willis is in fact an actor and he can do good stuff. So yeah, put that at number three. Number two then is one speaks closely to my heart, is Moonrise Kingdom. Because I just love that. I'm a big Wes Anderson fan and that's my favorite Wes Anderson movie. And I love Bruce in it because, again, playing drastically against type. Like, he's, you know,
yes.
has to play it very quiet, but he's just got such an aching, understated sadness throughout his whole performance. And everything, if people know when Wes Anderson movies, they're always very, like, stoically shot. People often say, like, they're not very emotional. They actually are quite emotional. It's just that the characters have a kind of stiltedness to them. And, you know, you have a sort of, once you get past that style and read into it, you know, there's a lot of emotion there. And he's yeah. he's doing the Wes Anderson performance, but he's just got like everything he's doing just really pours through of just like how intensely sad his character is, and just like you really, really feel for him very, very quickly. And I don't know if that's just been the enhanced likability of Bruce Willis just shining through naturally, or if he's just that good an actor, you know. But I just remember the time that was, you know, I was around after like Cop Out and stuff came out, and Kevin Smith was out giving him crap all the time. And saying like, oh, this guy's washed up, and you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's just lazy. He won't do proper films anymore. And then seeing Moonrise Kingdom and being like, well, he clearly can. Like, he just wasn't doing it on Cop Out.
It's just a question of whether he wants.
Yeah,
to.
When he's doing it with a script that's Cop Out,
there's never been director, canon.
He's just like, well, no. So yeah, I'll phone this one in. But when it's a proper film like Moonrise Kingdom, or like even freaking Sin City's better than, you know, like, he's playing a gruff cop in that, but he's doing more of a performance, you know. But so right. And then. Number one, yeah, you can't debate the greats. Just Die Hard. You know, he's one of those things that are just like a marriage between actor and material. It's just like You can't get any better than that. I know you specified.
Yeah, and nobody believed it at the time. That's the funniest thing about
it. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to put in Moonlighting in the list, but it's been so long since I've seen Moonlighting, and I know they've got a whole thing where they can't get it on streaming because it's like music rights issues and stuff.
Oh, wow, right.
So I've been lobbying to rewatch Moonlighting for a long time. I haven't seen it since I was about 12. But I remember loving it, but I didn't want to put it on the list because, like, well, I can't really verify that, like, that's a great performance. It's been decades since I've seen it, you know? But yeah, I got to imagine that, yeah, the guy from Moonlighting being, like, an action hero is like, what? And yeah, just all those, and them themselves kind of losing sight of, like, the whole appeal of John McClane is that he isn't an action hero. He's a guy. And then he's in extraordinary circumstances, and then somehow this morphed into him fighting on the wing of a Harrier jet. You know, you're like, what's happening here? but yeah, I know you specifically put in when you're asking, you know, to rank these things, which movie? And I will say Die Hard 1, even though I prefer With a Vengeance as a movie in many ways. I'll put the first one because.
Okay, that's fair.
I think he gets more of a range now. He gets to do all the quippiness, and he gets to do
And that's what spawned it all. You can look at it from that perspective also.
Yeah, but also that he gets a genuinely very effective scene, which I don't think he gets any emotional scenes in any of the other movies where like him.
Right.
That's true. when he's taking the glass out of his feet, then he's on the radio to Powell, basically saying like, just tell my family, like I was just trying to help people, you know, I was just trying to be a good guy and stuff. And Powell having to be like, oh, come on, Cabo, you're gonna get home and stuff like that. You don't get anything like that in the other movies, and it's just that moment of vulnerability in McClane is like something that's sorely lacking from not sorely, you know, this movie and Die Hard. They don't have that, and they're fine. But as it goes on, it's just like, well, remember when this guy was a human and stuff, and he was played by a really good actor who could portray an actual person and stuff like that. So it's one of those things. It's just like, I imagine you're probably going to be getting it from near enough everybody, but like, you know, you can't debate Die Hard being his best role, I don't think. But we'll see. We'll see how the rankings.
We shall see. Exactly. We definitely shall see. I mean, I can tell you that at least within the last 2 weeks, since this is only the third week, the number one movie only one of the times was Die Hard.
Really? Oh, wow. No.
Yes.
Was the other one Sixth Sense? Yeah. I bet it was Sixth Sense.
No. 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 The other one was Unbreakable.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't. What is it called? Glass left a bad taste in my mouth. It's kind of
kind
of tainted the legacy of Unbreakable for me, but.
Okay. All right, great. So Niall, you want to tell people where they can find
you? Yeah. My main show is Bat Minutes. It's been mentioned several times, featuring, well, actually this season, we'll be talking about Robert Costanzo because we're currently recording episodes covering Mask of the Phantasm, our own season 5. We have done Batman 89 through up to and including Batman and Robin. So all the live action movies of the 90s. And we didn't want to end on the note of Batman and Robin, so we're doing Mask of the Phantasm to see the 90s out, because it's acclaimed as perhaps the best Batman movie. And it's me, my co-host John, and we get in a plethora of guests from all walks of life. And you can find that on just all your social medias and all your podcatchers. You just type in Bat Minute. We should be the only one that pops up. And we had a great, great time doing the show. That's why we're still doing it.
That's right. That's right. That's why we do this, because we have fun.
Yeah.
That's true. All right. Great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can go to my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,